the Carol Danvers Show. That'll sound good overlaid with your music.
No, it won't.
Maybe it will. Oh, well, you have perfect pitch, so you would know. Our opening music is by the Ariel Wang Band. Did I just say banged? Well, band. It's Ariel Wang, but it's played by her band. She has a band. It's not just her solo.
Well, we're trying to come up with the band names soon.
I'm actually in the band. I'm on this recording. I'm playing the bass lines, but I'm playing them on cello, because that's what I do. And you're playing guitar.
Maybe our new band should just be called Carol Danvers.
The Carol Danvers Band. The Carol Danvers Show Band.
Or just called Danvers.
Maybe we should... Yeah. Danvers is...
Mm-mm.
No? Okay.
No.
Well, anyway, this is the podcast about the Marvel Comics character Carol Danvers. We're going through the early issues of When She Gets Powers. That's the 1977 volume of Ms. Marvel, Ms. Marvel Volume 1. And today we are talking about Ms. Marvel Number 6 from June of 1977, cover price of 30 cents.
Ariel will also be snacking throughout.
Ariel will be snacking and we will be pouring tea, and Layla the cat is also here. You might hear her purring. I think she made some... She's been on other episodes. She likes to do the podcast.
She likes to be involved in things, you know.
Exactly. On the cover, we have Grotesque, who's an enemy of the X-Men. But this is before Chris Claremont was writing the X-Men. Chris Claremont, the author of Ms. Marvel, and he ended up writing X-Men for a very long time. Layla is... intrigued by the food, and she just got off my lap, and I have a feeling we'll be switching laps soon. But if you could see her, I mean,
oh,
Ariel, what are you eating?
So I'm eating these Harvest Snaps, green pea snack crisps, which are my go-to snack because it makes me think I'm being a little healthier, even though I'm really not. It's like ground up dried green snap peas, which I actually really like raw too. But it's mixed with rice. And Layla is giving me the look of, how dare you not share? Just the other day, I was having some pakora, and she was batting at my hand. So this is a very rude little kitty symptom.
But do you think that this is something that she would actually like?
No.
Yeah, so she just doesn't like that we're eating, and she's not.
Yeah, she thinks she gets a share of everything that I eat.
Yeah.
Typical cat, you know.
Well, it's okay, Layla. It's okay.
So, later on, I actually would love if you would, because Grotesque comes into this episode, and he kind of alludes to some other things that have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, because I am not quite the comic book enthusiast that you are, but I imagine that you would know what he is talking about.
I have read the issues of X-Men that he's in, and I believe those are his most recent appearances.
Okay.
We kind of talk about it at the end of the last episode, if you guys want to talk about it. Because they give a foreshadowing for, or a tease. They give a tease for the next issue. And basically, Grotesque... Well, we'll get to it, right? As it comes up. So he's on the cover. There's a bunch of science equipment. There's flames, but there's not flames behind the words Ms. Marvel, which there sometimes are. But there's flames around our characters here.
And he's got Ms. Marvel in his arms, and it looks like he's about to smash her onto the ground.
Yeah, and it says, body slam.
And Grotesque shall slay thee, is the cover. Has the female Fury finally met her match? Well, probably not, because there's still like a bunch more issues, so I'm thinking she might get out of this okay, but we never know.
Well, maybe they'll fight, and then she'll be like, you are a match for me, and he'll be like, that's all I wanted. I just wanted recognition.
And then they shake hands and part ways?
Yeah, and become friends.
Yeah, that's totally how this goes.
Okay.
But hey, I'm to be surprised. So, do you want to do the credits? Stanley presents
Ms.
Marvel?
Ms. Marvel, I think it's the... So let's not waste too much time talking about the, the origin. But at the top it says, Carol Danvers, a woman who had it made. Until the day radiation from an exploding alien machine gave her the skills and powers of a Kree warrior, plus an uncanny seventh sense, transforming a human woman into a heroine.
Heroine.
And then we have Chris Claremont, the author, Jim Mooney, and Joe Sinon. Joe Sinnott, artists. Joe Costanza, letterer. Jay Cohen, colorist. A. Goodwin, editor. The first page, it's a splash page. We got J. Jonah Jameson, who is the editor of the Daily Bugle.
Butthole extraordinaire.
And he's also the editor of Woman Magazine, of which...
No,
Carol,
he is not the editor.
It says...
Oh,
sorry, not editor.
No.
Publisher. He's the publisher of Woman Magazine, because Carol Danvers is...
Yeah, she's the editor.
Yeah, exactly. And the first issue just hit the newsstand. And it says woman on the cover, volume one, probably number one, exclusive. Who is Ms. Marvel? This magazine cost $1. That's like over three times as much as this issue.
So he's, Danvers! He's not in a good mood.
He's pissed. The cover of Woman Magazine is Ms. Marvel attacking a robot. I think that's the Doomsday Man, right? From issues 4, 3, 4, something like that.
Oh, this part's pretty hilarious.
So J. Jonah Jameson is like, he's pissed. I made her editor of Woman, and the first thing she does is stab me in the back. Well, I won't stand for it. And then you can see the office is getting kind of...
They're a little worried.
Yeah, they know to like keep their distance.
Because he's about to storm into her office.
Jonah's on the warpath. And then he goes, is she in? She better be in, or the lot of you are fired! That doesn't seem very fair.
Well, doesn't seem like he's a very fair guy.
And they're trying to stall him, and...
eventually he gets in there.
Yeah, he's like, you can stay out of my way. You can get out of my way and stay out of it. It's Ms. High and Mighty Danvers I want to talk to. And then she comes in. He comes into her office.
She's all, morning, Jonah. Anything wrong?
And it's Mr. Jameson to you, Miss Danvers. And this is what's wrong. And he throws the magazine on her desk and goes, what the blazes do you think you're doing?
And she says, what you told me to do, a cover story on Ms. Marvel.
Don't play games with me, Danvers. I told you to do an expose, to discredit her. I hate superheroes. Remember? Always have, always will. But do you listen to me? Obviously not, because your lead story calls her the superhero sensation of the 70s.
She says, that's right, Jonah, because she is. Just last month, she saved New York from total destruction. What would you call her, the most dangerous woman since Typhoid Mary?
And that's not a reference to the Daredevil character Typhoid Mary, because she doesn't exist yet.
Everyone know who Typhoid Mary is?
And he says, yes! I'll treat her like I treat any superhero. And if that doesn't sit well with you, Ms. Danvers, then you can pick up your paycheck and get out! Do I make myself clear?
And she says, you sure do, but before I go, Jonah, got something to show you. The circulation polls hot off the research desk. According to their figures, Woman is the hottest magazine to hit New York in 10 years. In short, it is a rip-roaring, fire-eating, money-making success because I made it one. I just want to make a quick aside because I think it's kind of relevant to some of the pop culture happening with, like, Black Panther and Ms. Marvel and all these, like, and, like, Wonder Woman is... You know, like, we're a very capitalist-driven country, right?
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why minorities and, women haven't been featured prominently is because people think that shit doesn't sell. But come on, Black Panther? Well, you look at the money-making figures, right? How much money would you say Black Panther made compared to...
Compared to what?
Well, just, I mean, compared to any other movie made last year.
Well, it didn't make as much globally as Infinity War, but it made over $1 billion. Pretty good.
Which is
and
pretty
we would just watch both of those, and I think we both agree Black Panther is the better film.
Yeah. Although Infinity War 2, I am very much looking forward to.
Yeah, me too. It's called Endgame.
Yeah. And, I mean, Wonder Woman, I have to say, maybe one of the best DC movies to come out
The
last few years.
I would say it's better than Aquaman.
And definitely better than, what was it, like Batman versus Superman or whatever?
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's as good as, like, the Dark Knight series. You know,
I just watched the Dark Knight. And I only watched part of it because once Two-Face shows up, I'm like, okay, I've had enough.
Oh, yeah.
That's the third movie, right? Yeah, no, that's the second one.
Second one.
And they have the whole, you know, shiploads of people, and they have to decide who lives and who dies, and, it's, you know... That's good.
Oh,
I'm good.
You're talking about the one with
Heath Ledger.
Oh, but Heath Ledger.
Yeah, he's good, isn't it? He's good.
That performance, pretty unbeatable in a lot of ways.
Well, so now this is the DC Movies Review Podcast.
No. Let's go back to this.
Okay. Yeah, so then...
Sophie, you have as much sense calling back now as a... No, they're still fighting, and I think it's getting worse...
This is the receptionist, I think.
Hold it, Janelle. You know what happens every time Mr. Jameson sees you. So she's, like, fielding calls.
I think Gianelli is a spider. I think these are all Spider-Man characters, because J. Jonah Jameson is mainly Spider-Man. And apparently Gianelli and Jameson they, like, fight a lot. He's making his way in there.
So Gianelli is from Spider-Man?
I guess so. I don't think he's an important character.
Well, he says, hey, Mary, I'm not going to hit the guy, you know, this time. So, woo, got some history. Butthole does not have many friends.
No. He's a jerk.
Yeah.
Do you want to read this? So Carol and Jameson, that flashes back to their
argument. And she says, and I'm not going to lie. Woman is not going to lie for you or anyone. Oh God, not here, not now. So she's getting one of her
spells. What happens is that she kind of like gets these huge headaches and then turns into Ms. Marvel. It's like an alter ego situation.
Right.
And then Jameson's like, don't change the subject, Danvers. What? Not Danvers. Good Lord. And she faints in his arms. And
they all think that he beat her.
Yeah. And then, you stupid to punching out your editors, Jonah. Shame on you.
He says, Janelle, I should have known your job. My day is complete. Help me put her on the couch. That's my Jonah Jameson.
That's good. Do you want to continue?
Just like a woman. The minute she starts losing her... discussion, she faints, which is hilarious because he's, you know.
It doesn't seem like she was losing.
It doesn't seem like he's winning anything. And so Janelli says, sure she did. Watch your lip, Janelli. I'm so punish her on here. Let me know when she comes around if she needs a doctor bill it to me.
Alright, so, you know, he's not horrible.
No, I think he just doesn't want them to think that he's beating on her, you know? He knows, I mean... You know,
right.
He's a butthole, but...
Well, maybe he knows he's mean, but he didn't know he was so mean that he could cause Carol to faint.
I think and it's a liability.
He feels a little guilty.
I think it's a liability issue.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah. I mean, because maybe he'd be sued for being so mean that he caused her, like, serious harm.
Yeah, so I don't think he's doing this out of, like, the compassion of his cold, dead heart, you know?
Okay.
But
well,
that's just me.
Then, basically, she starts to have one of her seventh sense premonitions. And she sees firefighters putting out a fire. She sees a huge fist smashing something. She sees that same fist tearing the floor out from under the firefighters. And then she sees herself getting whacked by this fist and a huge... tons of steel crash down. And she's kind
of
like, she's under it. And then she wakes up
And she says, no!
Easy, boss lady. Just lie back and relax. You're among friends now. There's nothing here can hurt you,
says Janelli. And then the receptionist says, Carol, are you okay? She says, I think so. All right, people. Show's over. Let's quit rubbernecking and get back to work, hmm? So she's, I think, a little embarrassed. And then she says, sees Janelli, says, oh, should I know you?
He goes, not really. Name's Gianelli. Frank, reporter slash photographer, freelance. Robbie Robertson said you were looking for good people to work on women. I'm good. In fact, I'm the best.
And she says, uh-huh, modest too. Okay, hotshot. UPI reports a refinery fire over in Jersey. Cover it.
Isn't that more the Bugle's line of work than women's?
Usually, but the fire department handling the call has women firefighters as well as men. Now do you see the connection? Sometimes you gotta spell it out, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So then she has her reception, her assistant call her shrink, Dr. Barnett, says that she wants to make an appointment, and she gets in the elevator, and instead of going down to the lobby, she presses the button for the roof, which is not what she meant to do, and once she gets to the roof, she turns into Ms. Marvel.
Yeah.
And so, her clothes change, her hair changes, she has a mask on.
And it's funny, because, you know, it seems she has an inner dialogue, because she says, Ms. Marvel fighting to break free, and I can't stop her. And then Ms. Marvel says, why should you want to, Carol? After all, we're the same person, aren't we? So, this will come up.
Yeah, aren't they?
I mean, I feel like this is... Anyway, it'll come up later on. I don't think in this issue, but this comes up in a later issue.
And then she flies away.
Quick question aside, though, is Barnett her shrink, like, officially, or just a friend that happens to be a psychologist that when she needs help?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, I does she pay for the sessions? Is that the question?
No, I think just what is the nature, like, how did their relationship start? Like, did she have him as, like, her psychologist, her psychiatrist before all of this stuff happened, or were they friends first?
I think they're friends first, and she had, like, one of these fainting spells in front of him, and then he hypnotized her and realized that she thought she was Ms. Marvel and first thought she was delusional, but then she changed into Ms. Marvel in front of him, and then she knew that she was telling the truth, and then, so he's in on the secret.
Right. So all of this kind of psychiatrist business kind of started afterwards. Okay, I was just wondering about that, because I haven't read prior issues.
Right.
Prior to this series.
Anyway. Oh, right. No, I think we've read all of his appearances.
Oh, okay.
Because her previous appearances are all when she's at Cape Kennedy as the security chief for that military base.
Right. So, you know, she says, things are so confused. I am the same woman I was a moment ago, and I'm not. I'm alien, warrior, Kree, and I won't be denied.
So then she flies away, and we get a little glimpse of a video camera that's watching her. Creepy!
Oh, yeah. I kind of forgot about that.
And then the refinery fire is over in New Jersey, and we just see her flying over there. And she's starting to think to herself, oh, like, these premonitions that I'm having, they're coming true. This is the first one, the refinery fire.
Yeah, and then ending with me getting buried alive, probably killed, and my seventh sense has never been wrong before. So she says, but lives are at stake. I may be the only one with the power to save them. So like it or not, I get involved. So she's ready to sacrifice her life, knowing that she might die.
Right.
You know, to save these.
That's like a trope in all the Marvel movies that have been coming out. Like, everybody almost dies. You know what I mean? They're like willing to die to save the day.
But do they go in already seeing the fact that
image
of themselves dying?
Well, it's not the same, but like Ant-Man, remember he goes subatomic. Nobody's ever come back from that.
So true.
And like Captain America crashes the plane. He flies the plane away so that they won't destroy a city, knowing that he's gonna go down with the plane. Thor, in the first Thor, there's this big like robot thing that's wreaking havoc in New Mexico, and he's like, just kill me instead. Yeah. And then it does shoot them, but then that's what makes them worthy. You know what I mean? And I think the list goes on and on.
So that's a superhero trope.
Yeah.
That's, you know, being willing to sacrifice themselves.
So she lands, and the workers there are like, you gotta get out of here. This is the worst fire in New Jersey history. And she kind of ignores him and blasts through the barricade. And when she gets in, she sees the second image of her premonition, which is this fist ripping the floor out from beneath the firefighters.
Well, before all that, can we go back just a couple of frames?
Sure.
Where he says, you know, that goes for you too, Dr. Ellis. The storage tanks behind the tower below, this whole complex will go up like World War II.
Oh, yeah.
And Dr. Ellis talks about the Cavorite crystal in my lab is more valuable than you can know. And he's like, so you've told me, that's why I got a hose crew risking their lives to get it out, but all those four firemen are all I can spare. So we're going to find out more about this crystal later.
Right. And then Ms. Marvel's like,
four firemen, I lay the odds, that's the second image in my premonition. And it flashes back, and when she gets in, it's not a flashback. So then she goes in and sees that even as she smashes through the lab's front door, she knows she's too late. And she sees his arm smashing through the floor and the fireman saying, you guys, watch it. The floor's collapsing under us.
And then they're like, oh, that was a cave-in. They're like, that's not a cave-in. Cave-in my eye. And then they turn around and they see Grotesque. He calls himself Grotesque. He goes, Grotesque, you pitiful human fleas. For that is the name given Prince Gortok of Subterranea by you surface dwellers when I first appeared on your hellish world.
It was I who set the fires that rage around us to cover my escape with this crystal your scientists call Cavorite, which with it I shall avenge my murdered race by destroying your precious earth. So this is what I had a question about, is he was a race of people that got destroyed and...
Yeah, basically, there's a race of subterranean-dwelling people, and I guess the United States government was testing atomic bombs and stuff underground, and it basically killed all of the subterranean dwellers, and so Prince Gortok is pissed.
For a good reason. I mean, I hate to say it, but a lot of these villains, like, you know, they may have some reason to be pissed, some of them at least.
And yeah, so he's holding this canister which has the Cavorite crystal, and Ms. Marvel swoops in.
And she says, you're not destroying anything. And then she thinks, by the great Pama, did I say that right?
Yeah.
By the great Pama, the man's 7 feet tall if he's an inch, and from the looks of that floor, he must be as strong as the thing. And she swoops in and smacks him.
And then she just tells all the people down there to get out of there. And Grotesque is kind of... He can't believe he's being attacked by a woman. He's sexist, too. They have it down there, too.
Well, you know, I think that's pretty much a global phenomenon.
And basically they fight, and it looks like what they do is they swing and miss at each other a bunch.
Well, it looks like she is using her agility to dodge him. Because he's a really strong guy, but it seems like that's kind of been an ongoing thing, is like, she fights a lot of these things, like even the robot from issues back, you know? It's like they're all super strong, but they're not as fast as she is. So even though she, you know, maybe she's matched with them by strength, but she's really using her agility to dodge them.
And her smarts. So basically we just learned that Grotesque is super strong.
Yeah.
And eventually he throws her into like a flaming wall or something, and it shorts out the circuitry web built into her costume. And it causes her incredible pain. And we know from earlier issues that that circuitry in her costume is what helps her fly and create like a breathable atmosphere around her so that she can fly in space, and apparently also shield her from smoke. And so now that that's not there, she's suffering from smoke inhalation.
And she says, the circuitry built into my costume is shorting out. Pain tearing through me more than I can stand. Without this Rob's energy, she can't fly. So she's got no way to get out of there. You know, and she's getting choked.
Yeah, this is a brutal panel here.
Yeah, but then she smacks him in the ears.
Yeah.
Which,
it's at boxing ears? Boxing
ears?
Yeah,
popping your eardrums, basically.
He goes, dark gods, the pain! Human witch, what have you done?
Popped your eardrums, chum, a killing blow.
She thinks
that
to herself.
That merely left you stunned. Here's hoping a right cross stung you even more. Keep pushing, lady, and don't give him a chance to pull himself together. So now she's really strong, but again, she's really relying on her agility as well, because she's just pummeling him so he doesn't have a second to get back together.
Yeah,
but she
does lay the smack down on him.
Oh, yeah, I mean, she's super strong, but, you know, I do think that with a lot of these, like, male villains, they rely a lot more on their strength.
Yeah.
And their smarts or their agility. And she has both. You know, she's super strong and super fast.
But she does lay him out for the count.
Mm-hmm.
And she picks up the canister with the Cavorite crystal. And she gets a flashback to Houston's Lunar Receiving Laboratory.
That's where she used to work, right?
I guess so. This is not the Cape Kennedy base in Florida. So this is another part of her life. Yeah, her past.
She says, what's all this fuss about? And the lab...
No, this is Dr. Peter Corbeau, who is... he's an X-Men a lot. He is a astronaut/scientist and all-around spectacular human being. He's good at... Cool. He's, like, good at everything, and he's kind of, like, good at whatever you need him to be good at that moment. So, you know, maybe it's flying a plane or a space shuttle or talking about a crystal that has the potential to destroy the entire world.
So, he says, doesn't look like much, does it? Appearances are deceiving, Miss Danvers.
How so, Dr. Corbeau? As security officer on this project, I'd like to know what I'm guarding.
Basically, the crystal is a high-ranging energy matrix. Pour power into it and it seems to warp the space around it. In theory, pour enough power into it while focusing and refining the matrix flow, and presto, we have a potential faster-than-light star drive. In theory. Fortunately, if we make the slightest mistake, the matrix backlash will probably destroy the world.
And, So that's basically, we learn that the Cavorite crystal is really powerful and really dangerous.
Yeah.
But faster-than-light travel is, huge. I mean...
Well,
we haven't watched Star Trek First Contact yet, but warp drive, the invention of warp drive, is what brings the Vulcans to Earth, and that changes the trajectory of human history.
Whoa. So the Vulcans figured it out.
Yeah, but that's kind of a different universe here.
Yeah, so which brings us to Celia Petri's Skylab shot. NASA's planning to test the crystal in orbit. I better get out of here. Grotesque must know the crystal's potential for destruction if he gets his hands on it. And so just that time of the flashback, and he is conscious right behind me. So he wakes up.
Grotesque does, yes.
Yeah. And she's thinking, so sick from the smoke. My seventh sense didn't warn me. Have to ride with this punch, hope for the best. So he's conscious and beating on her now.
The crystal will be mine. I've come too far, endured too much to be kept from my goal by a mere slip of a girl.
Would you like more tea?
Sure. I'll take more tea. And then she says, what? He's grabbing my scarf. Can't concentrate. Fight back. So
maybe that scarf is not such a great addition to the costume.
Well, yeah. I mean, it just seems like she does rely quite a bit on this costume.
That's
you
true.
Know, for some things. Or at least this is, well, next issue.
The costume's shorted out, though.
Well, next issue I have some questions about this whole shorting out business.
Okay.
You fought valiantly, woman, but in vain, for nothing that lives can stand against my righteous wrath, which he does kind of have a righteous wrath. And she's thinking, hold on, woman, hold on, too much at stake. And he's pissed. It was you
serviced rebels who slaughtered my race with your accursed atomic tests, and we had done you no harm.
Yeah, so, you know, humans and their obsessiveness over spreading our nuclear technology to whomever and whatever and creating bigger nuclear weapons. Yeah, you know, maybe that's a problem, guys. We should probably stop, but, you know, there's too much money to be made, I guess. And so, you know, Grotesque is ready to make the humans pay the ultimate price.
Yeah, and so, now she's basically out for the count.
Yeah.
And he grabs the canister. She is super weak.
Yeah.
And the last image of her premonition is coming true, which is the whole refinery exploding and a bunch of stuff falling on her.
Yeah, the blast is heard 40 miles away as millions of gallons of oil ignite with the force of an A-bomb. The shockwaves tearing through steel constructs like paper, finally toppling a 40-story fractioning tower towards the nearby lab building. And she says, by the black nebula, the last image of my premonition, the tower falling towards me. It's happening. Boom, falls on her, and it's like the end of the world. And for one young woman, perhaps it is. For a long time, there is only silence. And then...
Chief! All of you! Look, there's something moving in the wreckage. Someone's alive.
Yeah, Gianelli, but is it that Ms. Marvel lady or the creep she was fighting with? Someone threw a light on him. And, oh my god, it's...
Grotesque! The woman you call Ms. Marvel is no more! Crushed beneath countless tons of rubble, the first victim of Subterranean's avenging prince! And as she died... So shall die your entire world.
That's very grammatically strange. But I guess he does come from a whole different world.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you think she's really dead?
I don't know. How many more issues are there? I guess if you're like reading this 15? As... Well, I guess if you're reading this as this was being written, then of course there's probably a little bit more, you know... suspense, but I mean, come on, the superhero never dies.
Well, nobody stays dead in comics. That's sort of how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about Phoenix, right?
Yeah, she was supposed to stay dead, and they made too much money bringing her back to life. Not Phoenix, Jean Grey.
Jean
basically
Grey, who...
they retconned it so that Jean Grey was actually in a cocoon buried in Hammer Bay, I think.
Yeah.
Just right outside New York. And the Phoenix impersonated her rather than the Phoenix Force merging with her.
Nothing is sacred when there's money to be made. But yay, the religion of the United States. Capitalism.
But, you know, I don't think that we're really supposed to think that she's dead. I mean, because it does talk about the next issue.
Wasn't, you're talking about Ms. Marvel. Who was it that was writing it? Chris Claremont? Wasn't he, like, really pissed that, you know, she came back alive? Like, wasn't she supposed to stay dead? And they were like, yeah, see?
Well, and it's not just because of that, but it also destroyed Cyclops' character, because at that point Cyclops had married Madeline Pryor and had a child with her. And so in X-Factor number one, he abandons them to go be with Jean and be with that, be with his old teammates. And so it's just like unfortunate, you know?
Yeah. I mean... Yeah, it's like way to ruin a good story. You know, I'm like not, you know, in the whole like, let's be communist or socialist thing, but you know, capitalism, straight up capitalism, not really healthy. You know?
Yeah, I mean,
there's some things that should be sacred, and maybe this is like one of those things that they could have kept going without Jean Grey, you know?
Well, I mean, she was dead for a good 6 years or something, and for those 6 years, you can read the comics, and it's like she's dead, you know what I mean? It's not like the fact that they bring her back ruins reading those comics.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I think that's the way you have to approach reading comics, because you know, they've been going for decades. And also, like, they don't even, they don't age. It doesn't make sense. If you need it to make sense, then you should read Harry Potter.
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking, like, you know, the whole Game of Thrones series. Like, I think most people can agree that when, like, one of the best parts of it was at the beginning when some of your favorite characters died, they really died, and that gave it, you know, meaning.
Absolutely.
To, but then one of the things that I think a lot of people don't like about, I mean, granted, they, if they keep killing off main characters, then they're gonna have no characters left, but
yeah,
you know, a lot of people didn't like how in the last few episodes, for example, how time got really warped and everyone knew everyone was going to survive, you know? And it's like, it takes some of the,
yeah, the last few episodes, what, season the, 6 or 7 of Game of Thrones?
Whatever the last season was. Takes some of the gravitas out of
the story. Yes, it's true.
So, you know. All right, but
all right, yeah, that's it.
That's it for this issue.
That's Ms. Marvel number 6, and we'll be back in 2 weeks or so with, issue number 7.
Yeah.
/ episode number 7.
Yep. See you then.
All right. Bye.